Call the May 9th, 2013 Code Enforcement Board meeting to order. Madam Secretary, will you call roll?
Mrs. Hines?
Here.
Mr. Kundig?
Here.
Mr. Harrington?
Here.
Mr. Smart called and said that he would not be able to make it today and asked for excused absence. And Mr. Borns is not here. I've not heard from him today. I haven't been to the office this morning, so he may have left a message there.
Okay. And excuse Mr. Smart, is he there?
Yes, we do need to. Yes.
Can we do that, Mr. Chairman?
All right. Take a motion to excuse Mr. Smart's absence.
So moved.
Second.
Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion carries.
And Mr. Brown is here. Mr. Cino is here as well.
All righty. Take a motion to approve our April 11, 2013 meeting minutes. Motion made by Ms. Himes.
Second.
Seconded by Mr. Harrington. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Any members of the board need to disclose any ex parte communication? All righty. Seeing none, we will get to our announcements as we're waiting on our Madam Secretary. For those coming to the mic, we ask that you speak into the microphone as our proceedings are being recorded. As soon as we finish with our announcements, we will take all attorneys present first, and then we'll work through our agenda as listed. Madam Secretary, if you want to make any announcements at this time.
Yes, Mr. Brown, we do have several cases that are in compliance that aren't listed on the agenda. First one is number 4, CEB 011304, for 823 North Oleander Avenue, in compliance as of May 8th, 2013. The next one is number 9, case number CEB 051346, for 1321 Imperial Drive, in compliance as of May 6th, 2013. Number 11, CEB 051348, in compliance as of May 8, 2013. Number 12, CEB 051349, for 922 South Atlantic Avenue, in compliance as of May 3, 2013. And number 14, CEB 051351, South Atlantic, and there's a parcel number, it's a vacant lot, compliance of May 8, 2013. Number 15, CEB 051352, South Atlantic, another parcel, vacant lot, compliance May 8, 2013. And that is all.
All righty.
And let Mr. Borns just...
All righty, let the record reflect Mr. Borns is present for our meeting. All righty. At this time, do we have any members of council attorneys present? All righty. We have Attorney Beer with us this morning, and we're going to take that case first. It is under new cases number 8, which is CB051345 MLFL Properties, Inc. and Daytona Outreach Center, located at 562 North Ridgewood.
Mr. Brown, I just need to swear in the members of staff.
Absolutely, and I'm sorry, I forgot to get that. Before we take that case, all members of staff that will be testifying today, please rise and be sworn in.
Solemnly swear or affirm that the testimony about to comprise the truth and will truth and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Thank you. That's okay. Sorry about that, Amy. I skipped over it. Case number CB051345. Again, the property located at 562 North Ridgewood Avenue. We will hear from staff first, and then Mr. Beer will give you an opportunity to respond.
Good morning, Mr. Chair.
Good morning.
Mr. Cino, members of the board. We're here in case number 8, which is CB051345 MLFL Properties, Inc. and Daytona Outreach Center. This property is at 562 North Ridgewood Avenue. The property owner is Meryl Lakic. And the business is the Daytona Outreach Center. And I guess I just need to ask, and I would have done this a little earlier, and I didn't get the opportunity as to Mr. Bourne. I know that he had been involved with Mr. Lakic before, and he's the property owner. I didn't know if that was anything that needed to be. I don't know if he's a current client or not. I guess that's a question, just so it could be properly disclosed. We don't have a problem with it. The city doesn't have any objections, but just as to Mr. Bourne.
I'll have to recuse myself.
Okay. Okay.
Well, all right.
Okay. But this case is before the board as a determination of compliance or noncompliance. It's brought before the board as a violation of Article 1, Section 5.3 of the Land Development Code, which is a nonconforming use violation. And let me get a copy of that here. If you'll bear with me just a second. I don't know if you have a set of that, but I think as the board knows, Article 1, Section 5.3A, Land Development Code, says land of use not currently permitted in a district, but it is a violation of Article 1, Section 5.3. The allegations are that the business was provided a occupational license or tax receipt. And here's a copy that we've had before. Thank you. And that tax receipt or license, as you can see in the upper left-hand side of the tax receipt. And I'm sorry, if you have a copy for...
Oh, sorry.
Yes. Provides for the use of business service, office use only. And on this property, what we have instead is uses that exceeded and is outside of those uses. The property is zoned as a BR1. But as part of that zoning, it was granted the use of office use, just as indicated. Here are some maps. Here are some maps of a property on the bottom right-hand corner. We show the parcel. It's BR1. And the photos will show that there were various violations of activity that was going on that was not permitted in that area. One of those activities, you'll see signage or signs that would indicate that they had a feeding program and closed distribution program that they were having would appear to the inspector to be church or worship services or church services, something beyond the general office use that's provided under the permit. Now, they were first notice of the violation on March 19th, 2013, upon re-inspection, the inspector found the property to be in compliance, that those activities had ceased. In addition to the activities that were going on the 562 North Ridgewood, you would see that there's an adjacent area behind that, and that adjacent area is shown in the photos as that fenced portion, which is not part of the 562 occupational license or use permit. And so that portion of the property was being used with outside storage. There was a porta potty in the rear yard. There were vehicles in the rear yard. And I don't know if those pictures are up or I guess he's obtaining those. But those two would be violations of the use. And so all of those things, as indicated, needed to stop. They have stopped. The circumstance at this point is that the nature of these violations are violations that would easily reoccur. They're irreparable. Once they happen, they happen. Once it's over, if we were in a position where we had to give them time to, every time we went out there to come into compliance, then the ordinance would be of pretty much no effect. So we're asking for a will fine so that the violations don't continue or reoccur. Now, one of the things that the board needs to understand is that while this area is a BR1 district, it's also the a new overlay district, which is the North Ridgewood overlay. And in the North Ridgewood overlay, most of those things that I described, specifically the feeding programs and distribution programs, are prohibited. So that's an activity that they would not be able to do. And because it's an area that where it's not permitted, it's not something that they can go and get a variance or be allowed to do. That being said, the staff is requesting a will fine, and just I know that Mr. Beers is going to get an opportunity to come up and talk, and but just as an anticipation of that, he and I just had a brief discussion about the questions as related to the way that they're using the office. And my personal opinion is that the board probably would not be able to resolve that. That's something that they'd have to resolve with staff. But nevertheless, so welcome to hear from Mr. Beers.
Just for understanding, Mr. Jackson, so at this time the case is in compliance?
At this time, the case is in compliance.
Okay. All right. Mr. Beers. Any questions?
I think you probably want to start with the inquiry as to whether or not they agreed to that they were in noncompliance, and we can go from there.
Mr. Beers, at the time of notice, do you acknowledge that some or all of the violations did exist?
There were some issues. I agree with the porta potty and some of the outside activities. I think our area of concern, our major scope of concern today, is the prohibition against meetings inside the office building. And that's really the issue I'd like to address, particularly if this board goes ahead with a will find, because if my clients have any more of their Bible studies in the building, then there's going to be an automatic financial penalty to them. And so I think that is really our issue of concern right now. We've stopped the feeding. We've stopped the distribution. The porta-potty's gone. And so those issues have all been addressed. And the vehicle storage, those things have all been taken care of.
I think, Mr. Baird, Mr. Sino, the issue in front of the board now is whether or not they're going to enter a will fine or not. I don't think we can give you direction on whether what you're doing is or is not a violation. I think you need to probably sit down with staff on that. I don't think we have this is not a planning board. We don't have the authority to make a recommendation on
I understand.
Whether it is a violation or not.
Well,
we only can bring it in front of us if it comes in front of us. I think your argument would be, we don't need a will fine because we're in compliance.
Yeah, if we can appeal a will fine, then that's fine. Because, again, I know maybe you all can't make the decision. And I know you're very busy today, so I won't take up too much of your time. But I've been the registered agent. I helped form this corporation. It's not a church. It's an evangelical organization as recognized by the IRS. So obviously their scope of outreach is different than a typical church. We met with Thad Crow and city staff way back when there were issues, because they were having big services outside. They were feeding and doing all those things, and city said stop. We've pretty much, that's not been an issue for the last number of years, but we were told back then it's okay to meet inside. it's okay, you know, as long as you're not having people outside, you're not having amplified sound and all those types of things, that we were okay. So that's when they put the pews, you saw the picture of the pews and things, that's when that all came about, was after we met with staff. So my concern is if there's a will find, if we can appeal it to the commission or come back to you all, we'd be happy to do that. But I just need to meet with staff and try to get a better understanding, because certainly we've been able to work our issues out with staff before.
If I can be heard, I think maybe Mr. Bears may not have a full understanding of what our will find is, which is that you're not automatically fined, but what happens is that you're brought to the board because of the prior violation, and then you have a full opportunity to be heard and have a full due process hearing.
It's equivalent of a repeat violation.
Understood. That's fine.
Yeah,
different cities have a different format, and I apologize.
Yeah.
I'm not as familiar
with
that.
Same thing as a repeat violation.
Okay.
And, you know, the argument would be is that we don't want us to do that. And the only difference would be is that the fine could be enhanced if it's another time, and we can go back to the time we actually saw it, as opposed to starting a new case.
That's
the difference.
That's okay. We have no problem with that. Okay.
Mr. Jackson, I just have a question. You know, it has been our practice, if you will, and each case is different, for us to use the will fine for repeat violators. Is this a constant problem with this property, or is this just trying to be a remedy for a future fix-all?
I think, as Mr. Bears himself has pointed out and acknowledged, that it's a long-standing issue. It's an issue to the residents. These are complaint generated types of violations that we come out to. It's an issue that's been an issue to the commission, and so it's which led to even this ultimate overlay type situation. So it's something that's of great importance to the city, and it's something that we'd like to have something in place to add to the deterrent for the additional activities.
Questions from the board?
Yes. The reason that I would be in favor of motioning for a will fine is that I think that the respondents actually know that they're not supposed to feed and give away clothing on that site, and they've known that for some time. So to have it done in March and April, this may just be an incentive to not do that anymore, because that's what the rules are.
Again, a question. On our agenda, it says first notified March 19th and then again April 5th. When were they in compliance with the violation? After the March 19th or after the April 5th?
I'm showing a date of April 10th. The reason there's two different notifications, it's, I think, one of the notifications, if I'm not correct, was related to the violations that I noted that were related specific to the property that were internal, and then the other notice was related to that outside storage and the use of that adjacent property.
But both items that they were notified for, they fixed?
Yes.
Any other questions from the board?
So included in this will fine, would that be the church use?
Yes, we would be asking that be included. It was the effort of staff, clearly, and you can see through the occupational license, the tax receipt, the intent that be specifically for business use, office use, and office use would be, again, you'd have to work with interpretations, but the perspective interpretation of the city is that did not include any type of church services, but an office use. And the question of the studies, if it looks like a church, and I guess that's what that question would have to be, and we'd have to see as we go to that. But what we see with people sitting in pews reading books, someone standing in front, has the appearance of church activity.
Mr. Bear, you indicated earlier that it was a prior problem doing services outside, and more or less you instructed if they move things inside, it would not be an issue. Is there anything written to that effect?
I could go back and look at my files, but again, the nature of what they were doing outside was strangers, people in the community were invited. The people that are coming now are basically the same people that are coming on a daily basis. And I think the distinction as far as, you know, what is an office? I mean, I have a business office use. I regularly have meetings with people from the community, whether it's Sierra Club or, you know, beach cleanups or whatever it happens to be, and that's public coming to an office, and it's not, it's in a different jurisdiction. But under the federal, there's a federal law that was passed during the Clinton administration that, that prohibited discrimination as far as zoning uses against churches and church-related type of businesses. And so if there's an ancillary use that I'm allowed to have for a regular private business, such as having meetings with people in the community, then if I have a church-related business, and I'm allowed to have those same types of ancillary uses. Although, obviously, you know, studying the Bible is different than perhaps some other type of meeting that may conduct be conducted in an office space. So I think that's really the focus. And I know that obviously you can't render an opinion on that today. But again, this is not, hey, come on in, we're having a service. It's more or less people that have been coming on a regular basis. You saw the picture. There's not a whole lot of people there, so there's not a traffic issue. They're not giving out clothing to the people. I mean, they may serve coffee and donuts, but it's not like people know that's a place to get a meal. I mean, there is a food pantry across the street that's still there, has been there for a number of years. So it's not like my client's use is a magnet to bring in homeless in the area. They were there when we got started. And that's been an on, obviously, the city's got ongoing issues with that. So that's our... that's our point, narrowly defined, is what can we do? As long as we're not advertising, hey, come on in and have a service and get a free meal, if it's a Bible study, dedicated people coming on a regular basis, then I think that, that we are protected by the federal law in that regard. So that's our issue. Thank you.
And if I may, Mr. Brown, I believe that would be a case-by-case basis. So until that situation arises, I think the concern as far as the need for Wolfine is that once things... Once the nature of these violations, the history has been when they start occurring, they get out of control relatively quickly, and instead of being in a position where we're having to go and say, we'll see you in 30 days, and then we'll do this, and then we'll set up a board and go through the long process, it is a repeat violation. The statute provides for and recognizes that when something happens once and happens again, it's a repeat violation. And the only thing we're asking for is a practice that's been well recognized by the board to acknowledge that and put in place a declaration of Wolfine.
Tony, I think that the problem is that you can't, you can use a Wolfine based on the fact that there might be a repeat of these types of violations. I don't think you can use a Wolfine that there might be a different type of violation. I think that's the confusion I have. If the board feels that that these particular violations may occur again, then I think a Wolfine is appropriate. But if it's something else that we haven't seen yet, then I don't know if we can do that.
And I'm fine with that. That's interpreting whether it's indeed a repeat, and in that sense of Wolfine, and we'd have to know that when we bring it, whether or not we're declaring it as something that's repeat, and it really just establishes the authority of the board once it comes before you.
Could I have a little history on the? I haven't seen this property, so is this an actual original church building, or is it an office that they converted into a church, or was it's a non-conforming use, but there's a church there? Is it a church building or an office? I'm trying to follow this business about having church services.
Well, the office, just so you understand, the office, what they have provided for is liaison for people to basically stop becoming homeless. So in other words, they've referred people to find jobs, they've referred people to addiction counseling. For a while, what we were doing is people that were down here, they had no way to get home, they would come there, and we'd buy them bus tickets, they go back to Kentucky or Illinois or wherever they were from. So that was the office use, again, under the definition of an evangelical organization, is they were helping people more or less get back on their feet. So that was our office. Our office wasn't saying, okay, we collected so much in tithes on Sunday, or, you know, what is the choir going to sing this week? It was more of an outreach type office is what they were providing. As part of that, they would have these services that were more in the nature, you know, we're going to study 1 Corinthians or whatever the part of the Bible was next week, and people would come back, and that's what they would do. And some of these were people that had received counseling there at the office. And I think counseling is legitimate office use, but it never has been a building that was formally or known as a church, but it was used for those types of outreach services is what our office definition was.
I have one more question. Can you tell me what MLFL Properties, Inc., how that's related to Daytona Outreach?
They're the landlord.
They're the landlord.
Okay. My clients rent the property from them.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions from the board?
Question.
You can't.
Yes, you can.
We're here on compliance or non-compliance. Right. My understanding is that they are now in compliance.
Yes.
Have they ever been cited before for this same thing?
No.
Because if not, I think we're getting ahead of ourselves asking for a will fine.
Mr. Jackson, that was my question.
Yeah, I was thinking I'd answer that. Really what I'm racing through my head is, understanding Mr. Bourne's inquiry as well, but at the same time understanding that he's, question's fine, discussion, I don't know, as far as with his position of recusal. But as I said before, what we're really looking for is just the nature of this type of violation, and that's not I know we're saying it's unusual, but it's not all that unusual for certain types of violations that are easily and quickly remedied, where every time we come, we'd have to once again start all over again to seek to enforce. So to add that added deterrent, well, a will fine to be put in place in a situation isn't as unusual, odd as it may seem.
Any other questions from the board? Seeing none, chair will entertain a motion to find the respondent formerly in noncompliance, currently in compliance.
That's it, isn't it?
Formerly in noncompliance, currently in compliance.
Second.
Motion made. Motion made by Ms. Himes. Is there a second?
I second it.
You recused yourself, Mr. Bourne.
Oh, sorry.
That's okay. Motion made by Ms. Himes. Is there a second?
Can I second?
Just press the gavel.
All right. Chair will pass the gavel to Ms. Kundig, and I will second the motion.
Okay.
All in
favor. Is there any discussion?
So we're not. Part of this
my discussion is, are we having, are we going to have, will we need another motion
to? The building wants to make, to suggest that they were once in non-compliance and now in compliance.
Okay. All right. There's been a motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Like, sign, opposed.
Did everyone agree?
Everyone agree.
Okay.
Now to paddle back to Mr.
Okay. Motion passed.
Motion carries. Any other motions with regard to case number 051345?
I'd like to make a motion that we impose a will fine starting today. Is that how you do that?
Motion made by Ms. Kundig to in place a will fine if repeat occurrences do occur. Is there a second?
Second.
There's a motion and a second by Ms. Himes. Any discussion? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign.
Opposed.
You've abstained, Mr. Bourne.
Recused yourself.
Yeah, yeah. You've recused yourself. All righty. For the purposes, I'm just do a roll call vote on this. All in favor of the motion, please respond by saying aye when I call your name. Ms. Himes?
Aye.
Ms. Kundig?
Aye.
Mr. Harrington?
Aye.
All righty. And all opposed, chair will vote no on the motion. Motion carries.
We need a
I believe we need four affirmative votes.
Motion fails due to a number of votes. All right.
Four votes. Motion fails.
All right. Moving on.
Thank you for your time this morning.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Cena, can I just ask a question? Can you tell me why the motion fails?
If you need four votes.
We have to have four votes to pass a motion.
So that, in effect, unless we all agree today,
because of the number of members present,
it could be 4-1.
the Mr. Vuzicruz and stuff. I only have four people.
Four voting members for that.
One of the board rules is that you have to have four affirmative votes for something to pass, regardless of the size, if you have a quorum.
Okay, thank you.
Is there another case we want? Yes. All righty. At this time, we'll consider case number six, which is CB041338, La Playa Ocean Waters, LLC, property located at 2500 North Atlantic Avenue. Just to remind the board, this property was brought to us on last month. We put a order in for permits to be obtained by the 22nd of April to be brought back to us today to set a compliance date. Is the respondent present? All right, at this time, we will hear from Mr. Jackson and the city. While staff is preparing, just want to remind the board, this was the case where it was some structural concerns. We had the photographs last time of the parking area under the hotel, and there was some severe concern over the safety of the people and the persons in the parking area that we were able to see, and then some structural items that needed to be addressed as well.
Good morning again, Mr. Chair, members of the board. This is case number six. The property is 2500 North Atlantic Avenue, the La Playa Ocean Waters LLC. This property was before the board. This property was before the board on at the prior meeting, and at that meeting, staff was we presented to the board the numerous violations. There were quite a number of violations that were at the property, and we had advised the board at that time that the chief building official was at the property at that time reviewing the numerous violations. We did ask the board to find the property in noncompliance, which it did, and we were going to come back for a update and a compliance date, or at least a timeline to see the status of what was going on. Today, we were expecting the property owners or someone to be here from the property. No representative is here from the property. The chief building official is here. The city would still like for him to testify to establish what the status is of the violations. And I think there were some questions as to the concerns as to the level of protection and so forth. And so we'd like for the chief building official to speak to the board, and then we'll come back to board to make whatever requests we to make our requests. And so the city would call Mike Garrett, our chief building official.
Thank you, Mr. Jackson. Good morning, board. Mike Garrett, chief building official, city of Daytona Beach.
Morning.
Thank you. I really don't know where we're at here, so maybe if somebody can kind of lead me into what information you're looking for.
Well, if you could just go ahead and give a summary of this whole event as to where we are from the last meeting. A generalization of what's going on here and what we're doing.
Sure. Well, I brought with me today some photos that we took on, I believe it was April 11th, we did a site visit. So if we can just kind of go through these, and I guess you folks, again, you know what's going on with the spalling and, you know, how the building deteriorates out there with the salt spray. So, you know, this is a huge challenge for any building on a coastal environment, but... am I looking at myself?
Can I interrupt?
Yes, sir.
Simple question. My sheet says that there were supposed to have been building permits issued by the 22nd of April. Were they?
Yes, sir. Can I just go through this? And I'll be happy to get to that. I have a little synopsis, if you don't mind.
You say they were issued?
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Mr.
Yes, sir. No. Sure. And again, just wanted to give you folks a bird's eye view of exactly what's going on here. You can see some shoring in place here. And in this particular place, this is in the parking garage, and this was one of the issues that was brought up. And I know you're not, some of you may not be construction savvy, but this is definitely a severe issue with the structural components of the building. And this is one of the areas that our code enforcement officers indicated as a problem. So could we kind of roll through that, Mr. Clegg? And again, here's another one in the parking garage. It's showing some failing of a column. This is the actual balconies, if you will, if you're facing east and looking at the property. These are the guardrails. And the orange barrier tape at the top indicates that there's definitely an issue up there, and we're putting these things in place to prevent some lateral forces on the actual guardrail. Huge concern. So that's the major issue out there, and again, this is continuous throughout the building on the balconies. This is back in the parking garage, and again, if you will look at the bottom right of the photo, you're seeing what's that's called shoring, and that's a structural emergency fix, if you will, to help ensure the load of the columns and the beams in that area is being maintained to the earth. This is the actual balcony railing. And again, just quickly, what happens when you get salt intrusion into steel, it expands. And it's what's called spalling, and then it expands to the concrete, and then you get, you know, concrete failure here. So, again, very common on coastal structures, a huge issue to maintain. This is a prime example. This is another area in the parking garage. Not a big deal, but it kind of showed you that they tried to patch something. Keep going, Mr. Clegg, if you would. There was one real good one there that I wanted to show with the balcony railing. That one shows a little bit. Keep rolling. I thought there was one in there. Yeah, go back. No, you're getting way off now. Okay. Well, anyway, I mean, hopefully you folks got a general idea of what we're looking at there. I was out there on April the 11th. We had some of our staff folks out there, and I was actually out there with representatives of the Department of Business Professional Regulation, the hotel and motel inspectors. We wanted them on board with us. If there was any issues that we needed to address at the time as far as closing the building or closing portions of the building, we definitely wanted them on board as the licensing agency. Also present during that meeting was the owner's reps, the consulting engineer, and the contractor. So what we did on this visit that you're seeing the photos of was my first visit to the property that day. So I wanted to get a bird's eye view of exactly what was going on. And just to put it bluntly, I'm very concerned. So we had a follow-up meeting on April the 18th. And again, I met with those same folks that I just mentioned, with the exception of the state inspectors. And we kind of had a play out of how this thing's going to progress and how they're going to get permits. On 4/19/2013, we issued a permit for the work scope for balcony railing repair only. And at this point, we kind of agreed that we're going to break this up into three permits. Number one is a life safety issue, getting the balconies repaired. And this was the permit that was issued for $218,000 for that scope of work. And what they're going to do, just so you know, they're going to replace the concrete and some of the decorative railings and guards with aluminum. So that's what they're in the process of doing. The permit was issued to CDI Construction Development. Again, the job value is $218,000. Work is now phased, and other permits to be forthcoming for the garage area that you've seen here, and also for the flat work, which we call flat work on the balcony landings themselves. So those two things are forthcoming. Now, as the building official, I had asked these folks, I said, listen, we need to show due diligence here, and you know, give me a scope of work, and give me a schedule. And we have somewhat of a schedule here. And I'm a little taken back. I was hoping that the owner's rep would be here today because it was an updated schedule that was issued. But he's not. But anyway, I will share with you that we officially have some form of schedule for the work to be taking place out there. Yesterday, excuse me, let me back up. Tuesday and Wednesday, we sent a representative from Permits and Licensing to the location to validate if work was actually taking place. And yes, work is taking place. Per the permit and per the schedule, work was to commence on May the 6th, and they are out there working. So we're moving towards compliance, which is a good thing. I can certainly sleep a little better at night. And again, the schedule is revised. My understanding, my last meeting with one of the owner's reps, are we in compliance? I heard you folks ask that to on the other case. No, we're not in compliance, but we're moving towards it. We're partially there. I guess we're a third of it. We've built into the permit a series of validation inspections, if you will. So we're out there monitoring it and making sure what's going on. But if you want to know if they're in compliance, absolutely not.
Are you talking only about the balcony permit?
Right now, yes, sir, I am. And that's the first permit that was issued, and they're moving towards compliance with that.
Nothing's being done as far as the garage?
No, sir.
Mr. Garrett, just to piggyback off of Mr. Harrington's question, from our understanding, the structural issues in the garage, were they or were they not a matter of life safety in the sense of the urgency of them need, based on what we saw, it looks like it was crumbling. But again, we're not engineers, so right. We can see concrete fall and think the building's going to fall, just maybe chipping. And I think that was one of the main concerns of the board for the safety of anybody in that garage, in addition to the balcony concerns. And we understood some of the cosmetics. Yes, that can take time, but it was those structural items that the board was mainly concerned with.
Absolutely, and I totally agree with you, sir. And the area that you mentioned in the parking garage is really not an imminent issue. Okay. I mean, it's an isolated issue, as you've seen from the picture here. There's some of the areas that's being shored. I believe these are some of the code enforcement pictures. Thank you very much, Mr. Klig. But you can see some of the areas being shored. As the building official, my primary area of concern right now is the actual balcony railings. I mean, if someone was to come out and put what's called lateral force on that, they may fail. So we're making sure that we're monitoring it. We're under the duress, if you will, of a contractor and the schedule to get that done. But we're moving forward. So, we can't dictate that schedule.
Sir, can you give us a possible compliance dates that's shown in our statement right here?
Sure. Can you?
We can have a second. Just update. We'll take you the date for. We'll just ask them. No matter what's in some of this. But it's true that we're ultimate date.
Okay. By the Florida Building Code provisions, we have 6 months for them to actually start work. There's really no compliance date on there. Like I had mentioned earlier, we've built in a series of validation inspections, so we're monitoring the work and making sure they're staying on track. Now, again, I have somewhat of a schedule here, and I apologize because I didn't bring my reading glasses with me. So if someone that has glasses... See if I could see this here.
What is their proposed completion date for item 1?
Their proposed date is 8/23/13 for completion of the railings only.
Just the first phase, though?
Yes, sir.
Now, did they intend to place the second permit after the first was done, or did they get it sooner?
This was going to be applied for as we're moving forward with the balcony repair itself. Okay. So we're assuming, a phase project, at least one other permit, maybe two other permits to complete the job.
They won't do this. They won't pull the second permit until they get the first permit done, or they're going to do them simultaneously?
No, sir. My understanding is that they're in the process of getting bids for the other work as
okay.
we speak.
Good.
So.
Okay. So the first thing we have is the October, 8/23?
8/23, yes, sir.
That's 6 months.
Relying on your experience and expertise, Mr. Garrett, I understand that that's the time allotment on the permit. Will that work take that long from your expertise, not based on the time they have allowed?
Well, it depends, of course.
And the reason I ask is
periodically the board needs to encourage compliance and not on the respondent schedule, but based upon our schedule for compliance, and more so, again, as you expressed, for safety. Here, you know, you have a resort in Daytona that is used quite frequently, and, you know, and the last thing we want to hear is someone being injured because, hey, we had 6 months to do it, and we were in month five and had it done, but, you know, we have, you know, and if we need to encourage compliance on a speedier schedule, you know, I, for one, don't have a problem doing that. So, you know, my question is very direct. Will this project take until August to complete?
And unfortunately, I can't answer that because that's a contractual issue. I will share with the board. The owner made it clear to me that they have a very stringent timeline on these repairs. And once the contractor goes over those timelines, there's very heavy penalties involved with that. So I can only share with you, I believe everybody has a clear understanding of the urgency there and what we can do to, excuse me, to move forward with those repairs. Again, you're dealing with 8 floors, 10 floors, whatever the case is there. Mm-hmm. So it would be systematically working down to the lower levels. Mm-hmm. And I purposely build in for our protection a series of surprise visits, if you will, to make sure that that work is taking place.
Could you share with me your, I don't want to say lack of concern, but lack of urgency about the garage? You have these poles sitting in there, and you know the record of our Daytona, some of our Daytona tourists. I'm just very concerned that one of them goes in and wax one of those poles down and we have a domino effect. You're saying that that's really not realistic that that could happen, or?
Well, let me clarify. I'm not an engineer, and I would never claim to be. What we do, we lean on the engineer record for this project, who is Mr. Adams. He's a local structural engineer. So he's been on our site visits, and we get him out there and we say, look, in your professional opinion, tell us what's going on here, tell us what the remedy is, excuse me, tell us what the urgency is. And in his opinion on that date, this was really an isolated area. It's been taking a place, the failing that is, for quite a while. So it's not something that just happened. You know, of course, any time that we get steel reinforcement that's you know, under duress, then you know, we certainly have a concern. But in his opinion, it was the balconies that needed to be attacked first, and we agreed with that.
Okay. I'm still still very dubious. That's not an isolated case. That's probably a third of the garage there.
Well, it really is an isolated case. I wish we had a picture of the entire garage. I mean, what would we say the garage is? I mean, 20,000 square feet?
Well, is the second floor closed?
The second floor is not open. It's closed. And again, this one picture that you were just looking at, sir, was a beam that was running across there. And you can see at the top that's grouting, that's expanded and actually had fallen out due to the spalling. So, again, we're going off of the opinion of a professional engineer, structural engineer, not just any engineer.
He didn't work on the Tacoma's Narrows Bridge or the Kempler Arena.
I don't know, sir. I don't know. And again, you know, this is the engineer of record for the job that the owner has hired. So,
okay. Hold on 1 second.
Okay.
The engineering report is the engineering report from the owner's engineer?
Mm-hmm. Correct. Correct. Mm-hmm.
And that was the same engineering report that 6 months previous to the new engineering report, he said everything was fine. That was the testimony last time, that the building was fine.
Okay. I'm unaware of that one.
Well, that was the testimony last time. Then 6 or 7, I'd be 7 months ago. Now, the building's not fine. But we all know that concrete degradation in that condition does not happen in 6 months.
Correct.
So now we have an engineer who's issued 2 distinctly different reports in this time frame, and I have, as I stated last time, no, I can't rely on that report.
Mm-hmm.
I'm relying on your testimony and code testimony and the pictures that I see of tape on a balcony. And I don't know whether those rooms are rented. Are those rooms rented where there's tape?
No.
I'm willing to give this person no more time. And I want to know what the department, the hotel and motel business people said when they came to inspect. They thought this was okay, too?
DBPR, I believe.
Dead.
Right, DBPR. No, ma'am, again, we had two representatives of the state agency out there with us that day. And they seen firsthand the issues. And, you know, of course, that's their job to receive the balcony reports and to evaluate them. But they were very clear in saying that, you know, we're going to lean on you, local building official, to guide us and to provide us any input on what needs to be done here.
Okay. When you use words like severe, egregious, when last time the testimony from a manager was, well, we go out every day and look for possible concrete that can fall on someone's head, I consider that kind of thing a life safety issue, and I consider this whole building at this point a life safety issue, and I'm not willing to do anything but find them in noncompliance and move on.
Sure. Kind of, if I may, Mr. Chair, just a reference. I know you made reference to the last meeting and that letter, and I was just looking at the letter, and I believe the letter fairly interpreted would say that the engineer was saying that now that there was progress being made? Is that what
they were hiring somebody?
They were that they were going to work on it, that there was no longer the life safety concern. I don't know if it was necessarily saying that it wasn't a life safety. I mean,
okay.
And again, the same thing now as we look at the position of our building official is that with them being monitored, with it being worked on, it's not the same level of concern as if it was not being monitored and there was not any work being done. Is
well,
that
I don't know how you monitor someone going out on a porch unless you're there all the time and leaning on the railing.
From your inspection, Mr. Garrett, are the railings safe?
Again, we have to lean on the professional engineer
right.
And say, I've looked at these and this is what needs to be done. And I didn't see anything imminent the day that was out there that was going to be falling on someone's head. But, you know, we're in the what-if business. So
well, not necessarily even falling off, but pushing.
Right. And that would have to be subjected to some form of test. You know, so that test wasn't done. And let me back up for just a minute, if I may, and you know, we can only rely on face value when we get an engineer's report. Here's a professional licensed engineer in the state of Florida. Right, wrong, or indifferent, we could probably all agree or disagree with that interpretation. But this is his professional opinion on what needs to be attacked first. And, you know, we have to go by that. So, you know, it's up to the owner. If the owner wanted to hire a different, you know, third-party engineer to validate that or investigate it, he certainly could.
Madam board members, your previous order dated 15th of April 2013 basically said that you're going to meet today for the purpose to determine whether or not permits have been obtained.
Mm-hmm.
Permit has been obtained. It was further ordered the case be returned to determination of compliance date. So that's what your goal. You already found a noncompliance. Your goal today is to give them a compliance date. And my suggestion would be the next meeting. Just to make sure that they're still working, because if they're not doing anything, you may want to institute a fine.
Right.
I think we should probably see this every month and see make sure they're making progress.
Mr. Chair, if I could address the board. Based on the facts that they have obtained their permits that was required, the building official and his staff are going to be continuously doing sporadic inspections on there. Discussion with our attorney. What we would like to see is let's bring them back in next month with a progress report and determine. Under state law, they are allowed up to 6 months. They have 6 months with their permit to complete the job. They're giving us a time frame. I think that with the continuous monitoring, both by the building official, we're going to also be checking to make sure that things are being done right. I mean, we're not the experts, but we're going to be going by and everything else. I think they are gearing themselves towards the right path.
Okay.
So if we come in next month with a progress report and see how far along they've come, maybe that'll give you guys a better understanding to where we can set this compliance date. I mean, we're already in May. Next month is June. They're looking at 2 months forward that they're going to get this work done. Feasibly, it could be done. I don't see the problem.
Ms. Kundu?
Hector, can I ask you a question? When there are life safety issues involved,
if
is that a judgment call on, or is that, is there something that we can...
If with the buildings official's expertise, if there was an immediate life safety issue, whatever room, whatever balcony, that would have been shut down right then and there. They've done a thorough inspection. We've gotten the engineer report. The engineer is licensed through the state. So he's putting his credibility on the line. Anything that does happen, God forbid, it's going to come back on him.
Okay.
And that's what we're relying on.
Any other questions from the board? Seeing none, the respondent being previously found in noncompliance, Chair will entertain a motion allowing the respondent until August 1st to bring the property in compliance and providing the board with monthly progress reports via representative of the owner, not our staff, via a representative of the owner, and that being either the construction firm or the owner themselves. On a monthly basis, and again with a compliance date of August the 1st. Is there such a motion?
So
motion made by Ms. Himes, seconded by Mr. Bourns. Any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign.
Aye.
Motion carries 4-1. Yes. All righty, had to get that.
Mr. Brown, just to clarify, your monthly progress reports, would they be starting with next
starting meeting? Next month.
Next meeting.
Yes. All righty. Case number one, CB1112126, John and Francis Witherspoon, property located at 315 Michigan Avenue. Today we're here for a progress report. Compliance date has been set for September the 4th, 2013. Mr. Jackson, what can you tell us?
This is case number one, CB1112126, the owners of John and Francis Witherspoon. The inspector in this case is Daniel Garcia. This has been before the board. This is from about notice violation that was filed back in March of 2012. The board may recall this is a situation where the owners have sought or and seeking administrative zoning. And there is a timeline that I can give you as to what's going on with that. On May 7th, they went before the Downtown Redevelopment Board, which was the unanimous approval of their request. On May 23rd, they're scheduled to go before the Planning Board. And on July 17th, they should be before the City Commission. Right now, the compliance date is set for September 14th. And so they seem to be working on it as promised.
All right. Good deal. Any questions from the board? All righty. Case number CB041341, James Stern, property located at 136 North Franklin Street. Is the respondent present? Seeing not, what can you tell us, Mr. Jackson?
This property is, the inspector for the property is Edwin Lopez, and this is a... before the board for imposition of fine. There were a number of violations that was previously brought before the board regarding window external fixtures, and as the photos show you, if you may recall, debris scattered and roof damage. There's no progress on the property. The property is scheduled for a tax deed sale on June 25th of 2013. So the position of staff is that we probably would be better to wait and see what happens with this anticipated tax deed sale before proceeding with an imposition of fine. Because it is now scheduled for imposition of fine, I will ask to continue it so that we can consider dating the ultimate fine back to this date if a fine is imposed back in July. I think the decision of what we do concerning a fine should be related to whether or not it's indeed sold or if it's maintained and retained by the owner. If the owner happens to redeem it, then we would expect the owner should have been working on these violations throughout this time period. It is vacant right now, but we would like to see something. We'll have to wait and see. We have had... that's all I have for you.
When is it up for tax deed sale?
June 25th.
So we would bring it back to our July meeting.
Yes.
Okay. Chair will entertain a motion amending our previous order. It's not amending the order.
Yeah, I'd like to continue.
Continuing case number CB041341 till our July 11th meeting. Is there such a motion?
So moved.
Motion made by Mr. Borns and seconded by Ms. Hines. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Case number 3, CB041344, Econo Malls, LP number 15, property located at 200 North Ridgewood Avenue. Is the respondent present? Seeing not, what can you tell us, Mr. Jackson?
This property is the Family Dollar store there on Ridgewood, 200 North Ridgewood Avenue. And I think we had a little question as to our status regarding notifications. Everyone has been and had been properly notified. We are this one. All right. Just a follow-up from a prior conversation with the inspector, but property remains in non-compliance. They have done a little work. We've had some contact with management now. But in fact, I think what I need to do here, if I can have a moment, let me talk with my inspector just a moment. I just wanted to clarify because what we're going to be asking for here, it is up for imposition of a fine. The inspector has indicated he's spoken with the maintenance guy. He hasn't been returned his calls. The position, as we said before, this is on a major city corridor. It's as you can see, the conditions weren't the prettiest or best. It's relatively new placement on the property. The city is asking for imposition of a fine of $100 per day to a maximum of $25,000.
Just a quick question, Mr. Jackson. Has the property owner received notification? That was one of the concerns last time that, yeah, we've notified Family Dollar, but they're just a tenant. Has the property owner received notification?
I wrote a note telling myself the answer is yes, but let me double check.
Okay.
An affidavit of service in the packet. So it was sent. A mail was sent to Allendale, Florida.
I have not received a green card back for the notice of hearing. It was posted.
Okay.
We'll cover it ourselves. Right, we followed statutory posting but haven't received a notice back.
All right. Chair will entertain a motion fining a respondent $100 a day, cap of, what was it, Mr. Jackson?
$25,000.
Cap of $25,000 or until the property is brought into compliance at a cap of $25,000. Motion made by Ms. Hines.
Second.
Seconded by Mr. Harrington. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Case number 4 is in compliance as of 5-8. Case number 5 is in compliance as of 4-25.
Your case is in compliance. You just announced you're in compliance.
Oh.
Sorry.
Oh, okay. Case number 5 is in compliance as of April 25th. Case number 6 we've already disposed of. Case number 7, CB041339, Streamline Hotel, Incorporated, property located at 140 South Atlantic Avenue. Is the respondent present? Seeing none, what can you tell us, Mr. Jackson?
This
we're here for a progress report.
Yes.
I'm sorry.
That's correct. This is the Streamline Hotel, and as you said, we're here for a progress report. The compliance date is set for June 5th, 2013. As you know, this is one where we show numerous violations, and the inspector, well, one of those violations previously with the board, the inspector says that he's working and making satisfactory progress, and we should maintain a compliance date.
All right. Any questions from the board? All right. Moving on. Case number 8 is in compliance. Case number 8 has been is in compliance. It's been disposed of. Actually, case number 9 is in compliance as of May 6, 2013. Case number 11 is in compliance as of May 8th. Case number 10, CB051347, Holly Hill Plaza, LLC, property located at 800 North Nova Road. Is the respondent present? Seeing not, what can you tell us, Mr. Jackson?
Let me catch up with you here. Case number 10 is Holly Hill Plaza, LLC, 800 North Nova Road. And the violation here is outside storage. And it's before the board for compliance and noncompliance. And the city will call Mrs. Stetson to tell you further about the violation. I'm sorry, Stenson.
Good morning. This violation was complaint driven for outside storage of junk and debris. This is the Holly Hill Plaza, Mason and Nova. It stretches all the way from Mason to Brentwood. It originally started with outside storage on the north and south end. This is the north end you're looking at now, the AmVet side. The south end was the Ross store. It closed, so that portion of the property came into compliance. As of this morning, the north end is in compliance, finally. I have had numerous conversations with the property manager, and I also informed her that I will be asking for a will fine because this is a reoccurring issue.
Any questions from the board?
Is there more? There's more than one business in this.
Yes.
Okay.
This is the more or less a strip mall.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
At the intersection there of Mason and Nova.
And there's not one business that's like it's the combination of a lot of businesses causing the.
That's incorrect. The AmVet is causing this particular violation. This is one business causing this.
That's on the property owner. All right.
Okay.
We have a history of problems with this property, as noted by the inspector. At this time, Chair will accept a motion to find the respondent previously in noncompliance, currently in compliance, and ordering a will fine for any future occurrences. Is there such a motion?
So moved.
Motion made by Ms. Kundick, seconded by Ms. Himes. Any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Case number 12 was in compliance as of May 3rd, 2013. Case number 14 is in compliance as of May 8th, 2013. Case number 15 is in compliance as of May 8th, 2013. Case number 13, CEB051350, Blue Mountain Management, LLC, and Sophia Incorporated, doing business as 4M Food Mart, property located at 740 North Ridgewood Avenue. What can you tell us, Mr. Jackson?
This is a resulting from fire inspection, the property owner is Blue Mountain Management, LLC. As announced, the Sophia Inc. doing business as 4M Food Mart.
Hold on 1 second, Mr. Jackson. I forgot to ask, is the respondent present? Okay, you all can come forward at this time. Let me go ahead and swear you in, and then we will hear from our staff and give you an opportunity to respond. If you can state your name, your relationship to the business, and to the microphone so that we can get it on record, and your address.
Okay. My name is Paul Blauberg. I'm the owner of Blue Mountain Management.
You spell your last name for the record, please.
B as in boy, L-A-U-B-E-R-G.
Okay, Mr. Blauberg, will you be the only one speaking?
I just bought this property on March 1st.
Okay.
So I
basically. Can you raise your right hand, please?
Sure.
Do you solemnly swear or affirm that the testimony you're about to provide is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes.
All right. You can have a seat, Mr. Blauberg, and we'll hear from staff.
Well, if you would like, I'd ask if you would inquire as to whether
Mr. Blauberg?
Yes.
Okay. Do you acknowledge that some or all of the violations existed at the time of notice?
Well, yeah. Yeah.
It's just a matter that we have to take care of administratively. At this time, we'll continue to hear from staff, and then we'll give you an opportunity to respond.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, the city will call David Newell, the fire inspector.
Chairman, members of the board, David Newell, City of Daytona Beach Fire Department, state certified fire inspector and fire and EMS specialist for the City of Daytona Beach.
Okay, and in your notice here, you have a very long list of violations, and if you can tell the board about those violations, what you found and what's the current status?
Back on December 12th, there was an inspection performed on the property that resulted in numerous violations. Just to give you a history of why it's kind of taken so long to get to this point, we changed over computer systems into an iPad, and it got we had some issues, and so I basically lost it and forgot it. So that's why there's such a time delay in this, so just so you're aware. Anyway, so back from that December 12th inspection, all the violations that pretty much existed at the December 12th also existed back coming up on the April 1st inspection. And those things are as follows. Fire extinguishers were not mounted on the wall as required by code. They had basically what appeared to be a hood system, the vent hood above a cooking device, which was a griddle, some of this stuff, right, which you see right there, which appears that there's cooking that is going on in there. They did say, however, that they don't, but it gives the impression with that, and plus there being food, and they were doing their annual or every six-month inspections on the actual hood system themselves by a licensed contractor. So that led me to believe that there's actually work being done. So I instructed them either to pull the permit to actually install the suppression system, which would be required for that, or to remove the actual hood. And that's in here also. There's numerous extension cords throughout the property that are utilized for freezers, Pepsi coolers, permanent wiring for stuff as registers and that kind of stuff. They would need to hire or pull an electrical permit. I've asked them to pull an electrical permit to put in new outlets or boxes and get rid of the actual extension cords that existed on site. There's so many of them just so you know, there's a huge issue. Emergency lights, the emergency lights that are on site, there's one above the area, the main table area. It was not, did not work or illuminate as required. There are also exit sign. There was a rear exit sign on a door that is not really supposed to be categorized as an exit, basically because it goes out into a space that is locked by a fence and then enclosed by a fence. That exit light did not work. Also with that, you'll probably see on here in a minute, there's some of the extension cords there, that door right there. If you could pause that real quick there, Tom, for me, please. That is the back door of where that exit sign is. So that's on the exterior. So an exit is required to be free so people can pass in and out at all times. This was being utilized to ensure people weren't going to break in at night or, you know, some of that kind of stuff. So that's something that can't occur. It isn't a required exit because it's too close to the main exit. However, there's two other doors to the what would be the south of the property, and basically what we've asked them to do is take that exit sign, put it at the other towards the other exit, showing where the other exit is, and make sure it's illuminated, and make sure that door meets the requirements of code for the means of egress, which just means don't put locks on it, so on and so forth. And then there was a bunch of storage that was placed too high to the ceiling. It was storage stacked too high above 2 feet to the ceiling. Also, there was some extension cords running through the ceiling, and also you can see where the fire it occurred at one point up there and self-extinguished itself. And like you saw up there, there was a missing electrical plate in the cooler area. My last inspection was May 2nd. On the May 2nd inspection, a couple items were corrected. They had taken care of that issue with the cooler. and some of the extension cords, and not all of them were taken care of, but they had taken care of some of those. At that time, the hood system, in the picture that you did see, the hood system, they have decided or elected to remove it. So they were in the process of removing it. However, there was no drywall or anything put up or drop ceiling for where that is at. I did instruct the owner and tenant both, which were both properly notified, if I didn't mention that earlier, to secure the structural permits or the building permits to make sure that work is completed. The grill or the griddle is still there, and I instructed the tenant on this part to make sure that that is also removed, and he understands that also. So basically, what I'm getting at is most of all these violations still exist from May 2nd. I'm sure they've probably corrected a few of them since then, but staff is recommending noncompliance next cutoff, and I'm not aware of any permits that have been pulled for that either.
Any questions at this time for staff? Mr. Blauberg, come back up, please, sir.
I hired an electrician, and he pulled a permit, and then the permit was issued yesterday on all the electrical in there. The fire extinguishers, they're all on the walls. The grill was removed. Where the extension cords were, they've got them all in the right position.
Sir, I'm sorry, you need to talk into the microphone. Do you want to hand me these and I'll
show
them out? Or do you want to show them to Mr. Jackson first so he can view these?
Let the inspector see.
Okay.
It's okay,
you're
just talking about
them. Okay. The exit light was fixed.
Mr. Blauberg, let me try and save you some time. With the work that you have brought photos of and that has been done, the staff's recommendation is, as you acknowledge, you are in noncompliance, is giving you until June 5th to bring the property in compliance. Is that something you will be able to comply
absolutely.
With?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. Not a problem.
All right. Any questions for the board?
No. No.
Yes.
The fire extinguishers, he got those up.
Yes.
The
grill
was removed.
Yes.
And something else, wasn't it?
The, you talking about the hood system? The hood above, is that what you're talking about?
The things that he has done.
Well, an inspection hasn't been done yet, Ms. Himes. He's indicating that he has done it, and so we're just going to give him the standard.
And the bar on the back door was also removed from there. Like I said, I just bought this 2 months ago. I inherited all these problems, but I'm here. I'm going to make sure 100% we're done with everything.
And Mr. Chair, just for Mr. Blauberg's sake, the inspectors told me as well that Mr. Blauberg has indicated that he wanted these things handled immediately, and he got right on them and seems to be very compliant.
Yes.
Good, good. Any other questions from the board?
Mr. Blauberg, did you say you just purchased the property?
Yes, March 1st, yes.
Is this, the notification here went back to last December.
Yes.
To the previous owner, apparently.
Yeah, I didn't have no recognition.
Absolutely.
Doing what you are.
Well, I'm cleaning that whole area up, and that's my goal is with the, we have warehouses that I purchased in the back too, and we had a lot of problems back there for 19 years. So my whole thing is, we're cleaning everything up.
All right. Definitely. Yes, sir. Go ahead, Mr. Newell.
I just want to make a quick note based on this picture. He looks like he did install some new electrical outlets.
That was there. He just had a thing that was plugged into it over here, so they've utilized and put it all in there.
All right, just to make a note that those, you're going to have plates to go around that. You can't have that exposed like that. So
Because the electrician is going to be there today, actually.
Yeah. What we would encourage you to do, Mr. Blauberg, is get with Mr. Newell to go over the items specifically.
Absolutely.
Depending on the board's decision, I'm going to accept a motion finding you in noncompliance, allowing you until June 5th to bring the property in compliance. And during that time frame, I encourage you to get with Mr. Newell to make sure you have everything up to par.
Okay.
Any other questions from the board? Seeing none, Chair will entertain a motion finding the respondent in noncompliance, allowing the respondent till June 5th to bring the property into compliance or be returned to the board for consideration of a fine up to $1,000 per day. Is there such a motion?
So moved.
Motion made by Mr. Bourne, seconded by Ms. Himes. Any discussion?
Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion carries. That takes care of our agenda items. At this time, we'll move on to number 7 under miscellaneous business. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
We'll move on to miscellaneous business. Mr. Scheiber has requested to address the board with regards to property located at 543 Live Oak Avenue. And at this time, just to bring everyone up to par, I'm going to ask Ms. Hampton if she will just give us a brief history, or staff, Mr. Jackson, if you can give us a brief history so that the board will fully understand the property, and then deciding on how to address the respondent's requests.
Mr. Chair, I think you probably were on the right track. The city would call Ms. Hampton for her familiarity and regular communication with the requester in this situation while we're here at this point.
All righty.
Yes, I just received a request about a piece of property at 543 Live Oak that has a code enforcement lien. It's currently in noncompliance, and Mr. Scheiber was seeking relief with the noncompliance and possibly a lien review. And so we brought that request for the board for him to. It's not typical for a case to come to for a lien review that's in noncompliance. So he's here to talk about that or request some sort of action. It's maxed out. I'll have to pull it to.
And sure. Mr. Shaver, is that the name? Is the realtor?
Okay. Yeah, not the owner.
We can swear him in. Can you state your name, please?
Tim Scheiber.
Raise your right hand. Do you solemnly swear or affirm that the testimony you're about to provide is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Thank you.
Mr. Scheiber, what can you tell us, sir?
Okay. I work with RE/MAX Property Center. I've been doing it for 27 years. And on this property, there's a third-party service provider, who Omni Credit Services, who is handling it for Citibank, and they had this thing as approved as a short sale. There's approximately $55,000 that's owed on the property. I had the property listed for sale for $21,500. The sales price on it was $16,000, and then there's two liens on it that was for $20,000. It was something that they're not going to, not wipe it out. The buyer had gone ahead and said, "The heck with this," gone on. But me as a realtor, this is what I'd like to, as a realtor, I feel the best way to handle short sales for the city is to have the written code violation be passed on to the realtors and a potential buyer. Checking with the realtor or the city is that the buyer be given 4 or 6 months to bring property up to code, and fines that are levied against a short seller be waived. If that practice is not done, it is a no-win situation for the neighbors and neighborhood or the city, because it encourages a foreclosure to happen and liens are wiped out. Plus, it can take 3 more years of the property looking ugly. Any new owner and encouragement for the new owner helps telling a buyer that the city will work with you in reducing a fine. Reducing a fine does not give a buyer much confidence, $20,000 fine on a $16,000 property. Buyers, investors need to see clear outlines of what the city expects of a new owner. You want realtors to sell the properties that are in foreclosure in Daytona Beach. When banks are willing to do a short sale, I feel the city needs to help make it happen. From 1990 to 2007, you were not faced with the short sale and foreclosure issues, but from 2008 to 2013, and which will go on through 2015, we are faced with this. If you want to clean up Daytona and change these rules, and you should have a speaker come to Daytona Area Board of Realtors and tell them your new policies of having of handling properties on short sales. That's it. Thank you.
All right. Well, you've addressed the board. That was your request to address the board with regards to the liens on said property.
Right.
And let me make sure I understand this correct, Mr. Scheiber. You are asking the board to remove the lien so that the property can be brought into compliance.
Well,
so that the sale could go through.
For any new purchaser that comes, I tell them, yes, you can buy this property, and you will have whatever the time period is, 4 months or 6 months. And these are the 10 violations that are wrong with this property, and you have to do that. Otherwise, you're going to go on to liens. Otherwise, people just don't mess with it. They just leave the property. It's a mess. It's not good for the city. It's not good for the neighbors. It's not good for the neighborhood.
Okay. Mr. Jackson?
Yeah, the statute provides for that, that the new owner, upon purchase, being with this being revealed at the time of sale, must be given time to bring a property into compliance. The information as to what needs to be brought into compliance is a public record that we make available on Internet to anyone who wants to have knowledge of that. And the inspectors, I'm sure, on anyone inquiring with some serious interest. I mean, obviously, it can become overbearing, I'm sure, for staff if everybody who looks at the property have to get walked out and walked through. But I think once you reach a point of serious interest, I don't know if that's necessarily unreasonable or something the staff wouldn't be willing to do, to say, okay, we have a pending sale, and can you just kind of point out or help me understand what this violation is, just maybe even through a conversation. Mm-hmm. But nevertheless, the violations themselves are on record, and the statute provides for a buyer having a right, additional time to come into compliance.
That's not the issue, Tony. That's not the issue. I think what he's saying is that he wants the lien removed now, as opposed to our practice, which is we don't remove any lien until they come in compliance. And that's the problem. And that's the position this board has always taken over the past years, is we don't remove liens. They will. I'll be honest with you, that I've seen them in the past when new buyers have taken over and solved problems. They've taken the liens and reduce them dramatically,
mm-hmm.
but I haven't yet seen them remove it altogether.
Yeah, it's a matter of having that buyer have the confidence. They come in, they're coming in from Michigan, they're coming down here, and then you're telling them that they have this kind of a lien on the property. They just say, forget it. They'll just go to another property. You know, you lose them to a Holly Hill or Ormond or somewhere where you're not, you know, not having to deal with that lien.
Understanding your position, Mr. Schreiber, and understand our position. This board is very generous in removing liens when properties are brought into compliance. They don't have to go on our word. They can go on the record that we will work with new owners who purchase properties that have compliance issues. I find it very difficult to remove a lien when we don't even know if the property sold. We're almost shooting
ourselves.
Well,
this one here was scheduled to close last week.
Okay.
So it was a $16,000 cash deal.
Right. And okay, the lien scared them away.
Correct.
Well, I mean, they closed on the property and brought it in compliance, it would be a whole new story with them coming before us saying, we bought it. We brought it in compliance.
But when you just hear it verbally saying that something will, if you take care of this, these things will work out, people like to see it in writing.
Take a look at our record.
I know, but that's
the only writing I can encourage you to take up is our record, which is much better than anything verbally. Our record is
coming on it.
You know, we consider those items.
See, like on this property, for example, any short sale, the person's upside down, so the seller itself doesn't have. You know, part of the thing is when I called Amy, she had said that the seller has to come to the meeting. The sellers, just these short sellers don't care. You know, I don't care about them. Nobody cares. It doesn't matter. You know, it's a matter of trying to have the property be fixed up and improved.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have a buyer or an investor who's going to come on in, buy a property, they want to know exactly, very clean as to what is this deal, how much is it going to, what are the violations,
mm-hmm.
and exactly what it's going to take care of. And the violations shouldn't be passed on to that person anyway on a fine, because the seller is already upside down fivefold on the property.
I understand.
See what I'm saying? So if you're wanting to improve the property, this property, by having that happen, that causes that property to sit vacant for 3 more years. Unless you guys foreclose on it and take the property and take the stance that you're going to foreclose on all these short sale properties, the way of doing it is to work with it, get rid of it, and then have the new person give them a time to clean up the property. You want realtors to be pitching out that City of Daytona Beach wants to do all this.
We encourage them. Not in that timeline. We work with you after we see that you're going to get the property. We don't work with you prior to you getting the property.
And Mr. Brown, we do have a practice of working with title companies and realtors. We've been contacted many times before, and there are things that they can do in closing. They can set aside escrows, they can waive title exception and let that set out on trust. And I know that doesn't motivate all buyers, but we kind of would like motivated buyers and people who are interested in our properties.
Right.
I think anyone would.
Hold on one second, Mr. Sharma, let me finish.
you know, to come and someone that's going to follow up and have a sincere interest in the property, not just a long-distance owner that says, throw the money and I'm gone. So we have great interest in people who want to come in and take that kind of interest in the property, and we work with them. It's not that we don't work with them. Now, but there are processes, and obviously one of them is that the mere fact that a lien is on a property sometimes becomes the incentive that adds to a sale.
Mm-hmm.
And so we believe, okay, fine, that may be part of the deal, but are we willing to waive and work with it? We very much want it improved, and we have a great history both through the board and through staff when it's not something that's necessarily coming before the board to work with and aid in getting these properties remedied.
I'm not looking at having the fine waived now. I'm looking at having the fine waived on the for clear title for on the day of sale.
You do that.
And then that way it goes over to the new party, and you're giving them 4 months, and then they have a list of things to take care of on the property. You know, what a short seller, if a short seller owes $100,000 on a property with all the liens and everything, the property's worth $16,000. A buyer is not going to come along and look at something and see that's a $20,000 lien, but will work with you. They don't want to hear that. There's too many other properties out there that are around. And a lot of times then you lose them to Holly Hill, South Daytona, Ormond, Port Orange. You know, so I mean, if you want to get all these properties, especially the properties that are very sad, you know, like this is a sad property. If you mm-hmm. drive by it and you take a look at it,
mm-hmm.
you know,
are you saying,
I mean, there's people breaking into the house. There's, you know, I mean, it's bad right there.
Are you saying in all these other cities they waive the fine when there's a short sale?
It's very clear. I'm telling you, if you talk to realtors, if you go down and if you took a poll of the realtors and you ask them as far as how the cities are working with you on these the short sale world, this is a whole different world that we're in right now. It has nothing to do with anything else that was going on back prior to 2008.
Specific question: are the other cities waiving
yes.
this in advance?
Yes. No, not in advance. On the point of sale. Yes. Not in advance. On the point of sale, they'll go ahead and get rid of those liens.
But what if that if we did that
right.
and the owner decided they weren't going to do anything, and then we're back to zero again?
Right, but you're not getting any other money out of the other people anyway.
Correct.
So the new owner, then you're giving them a time frame though. I don't care if the time frame depends on what the violation is. The time frame you might give them is only 30 days. You might give them 120 days. Depends on how bad the property is. But any way of getting that property cleaned up instead of sitting in a idle status while the bank twiddles their thumbs for 3 years, you know, you got to try to get those sales to happen, you know.
Am I hearing correctly, meaning that after the short sale, he doesn't order about the time the person has to clear it up, just that it gets cleared up?
What I'm getting, Ms. Himes, is what he's asking is if we will consider at the point of sale getting rid of our fine and basically our fine disappearing at the point of sale. And my hesitancy is we have no guarantee that the property will ever be brought into compliance, whereas it is, again, has been our practice that when properties are sold and the new owners bring them into compliance, as you can see with the case that you were witness today with the new owner of a store bringing the property in compliance, we will gladly work with you. Our objective as the board is to make sure Daytona is attractable.
Is
to make sure that Daytona is attractable, and it is, you know, it has not been our practice to waive liens prior to a sale because, again, we have no way of achieving our goal, and that is to bring the property into compliance.
But okay, part of removing that fine is if you have the buyer sign a paper that he understands that these have to go into, or he's going to end up getting these fines levied on him. You know, I mean, it's you're going from a person who's a horrible person that has absolutely no money to a person who has more money than the other person, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm.
So at least you're dealing with a better potential person, and if they don't abide by what your rules are, you levy the fines on them. Keep levying fines on this other property. You can give her $1 million fine. She doesn't have any money.
Right, and I understand what you're saying, and it's just, again, I go to our record.
Right.
We have a history of working with new owners.
But the people
that are from out of state who are down here to buy, they're not going to take the time to look that up. There's other stuff that's
as
available.
As the realtor, that's something you can provide, you know, to encourage the sale.
Well, on a $16,000 sale, the commission is like this. Mm-hmm. So I'm not doing this for the money. I'm doing this to try to help out Daytona.
I understand.
It's just an idea.
And we respect it, and we thank you for it.
The problem, Mr. Schreiber, also is that the liens are in favor of the city, not in favor of the board. And this board has been delegated the authority to review liens when there's situations, when there's compliance. We have never been given the authority to eliminate liens when there's no compliance. And maybe it's a commission decision, I don't know, but I don't think we have that authority at this point to eliminate liens prior to the noncompliance. And I know I do work for Volusia County, I do work for Port Orange, some other cities, and they don't do it either. Maybe so, I don't know if South Daytona or Ali Hill do, but they don't do it either. They have to come in compliance before they remove a lien. And we do that. We do that all the time here. Mm-hmm. We want to encourage them.
I guess it's, you know, Port Orange doesn't have the pleasure of the $16,000 properties.
No, they have some,
correct.
Well, there's some on Ridgewood Avenue that are close to that.
Okay.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Sharp. Any other questions for the board?
No. I mean, I just think it's whoever it is to be able to make those powers be, I'm not going to spend any other energy on it, but I mean, I think somebody ought to go ahead and take the energy to get it back, to get that change, because you're in a short sale world situation, and these short sales, if you have a bank that's willing to do a short sale and close on it right then, if not, and it goes into foreclosure on a low price property, you're looking at 3 years on the foreclosure. So you're looking at 3 years of the property sitting there instead of just going ahead and getting it done.
I thank you, sir, for expressing and bringing your concern to the board. Any other miscellaneous business to be considered? Any items from staff? Ms. Hines?
No.
Ms.
Register for the course?
Oh, yeah. When or after registration for the course?
Yo. Okay.
Is interested in going to the faith conference. I didn't get it. I don't know.
Okay. Well, any other board members interested in going to the faith conference that have not expressed their concern? I know I've sent mine in.
I'm going.
Mr. Harrington. Okay. Mr. Bourne's? No. Okay. All right. Have we heard from Mr. Smart?
No, I have not, as far as.
Okay, we can just contact him to see. So right now it's all of us minus Mr. Bourne's.
I can send him an email.
Okay. All righty. And so whatever fees that is, Hector will take care of it.
Thank you.
$23 or $28, yeah.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Just a FYI.
Just
yeah. You can discuss it. We just don't vote on it, Mr. Bourne, for any matters that we recuse.
They have to register on their own, right?
Yeah. We can. Yeah. You can participate in the discussion. You just don't vote.
Last time.
Any items, Mr. Bourne?
We did it.
Ms. Kundig?
No, thank you.
Mr. Harrington?
No.
Mr. Sino? All righty. And I have nothing. Let's consider ourselves adjourned.